Session number 3965, reel number 3.
Captain Sheen, reel 3. Did you do a tour of inspection outside Accra?
Yes. normally we dealt with the outstation quite satisfactorily by post, but if any problems arose, they would ask for an experienced warrant officer from headquarters to go and advise. This was usually when the accounts became muddled or someone hadn't accounted for all the stores and equipment that they'd received and they wanted sorting out and putting right. I did one prolonged visit to sort out some rather sticky problems.
What sort of problem?
The accounting had broken down. I think it was that someone had been sick and had gone on sick leave and they weren't returning and they'd left the accounts in rather a mess. And I went up on this occasion to make an inspection to sort out the accounts, and it was over 200 miles from Kumasi to Tamale, mainly through bush company, bush country, and there was no train service available because all trains terminated at Kumasi, so one used one's own motor transport and claimed mileage for the trip. And when I went to Tamale, my wife was out with me for part of my tour, and I got permission for her to come with me. I wanted her to see the Northern Territories, and we had quite an interesting trip altogether. We started off in about 50 miles outside Kumasi. We saw, I should think, about 200 baboons, and they were advancing across the road, and they all sat down to have a good look at us, and one didn't quite know what to do. I thought the best thing to do was to stop, and it didn't seem that they were going to attack us, so I drove slowly on and the baboons dispersed and then went back into the bush. And then further along we ran into a swarm of locusts. I should think there must have been hundreds of millions of locusts because they were everywhere. The sky was blotted out, it became quite dark, and the only thing to do was to close the car windows and to go through this swarm of locusts and hope for the best, which we did. Of course they were on the road and we were squashing them, and they were on the windscreen. Fortunately I decided, managed to steer a straight course, and I should think it took us about half an hour to get to the other side of this swarm of locusts.
Did you meet any African villagers when you were going
to Yes, we we stopped at one or two villages on the way to see the people. We were always interested in talking to Africans. We always found that there was someone in the village could speak Pidgin English, And these people were right out in the bush. They were extremely happy people, and very friendly too. And as is usual, when you call on these people, they expect you to give them what is known as a dash, which means a gift or a present. And on this occasion, I think we gave them a mirror, which they love. And then we made our way on. I think we stopped at another village and did the same thing. Both interesting. We took photographs. My wife had some snaps taken with the little children. And by and large, it did relieve the monotony of the journey. And then at Tamale, of course, I was very busy all the time. My wife went into a local quarter where we were housed for the duration of my short tour. And while we were there, we were able to have a run round in the car and see the surrounding country, which, generally speaking, was very open and flat, but quite interesting.
Could I ask you now about some of the conditions of service for Africans? What were the arrangements for food? Did they cover the family?
Yes, the the African soldier was paid a flat rate of pay, and this included a sort of a subsistence allowance. In other words, they looked after themselves, and if they had children, as a lot of them did, then a little was added to their subsistence to enable them to take care of their family and bring them up well.
What sort of food did they eat?
Well, they ate local food, such as yams and a thing called fufu, which was prepared very skillfully by the soldier's woman. And they had the usual three meals a day. But so far as the regiment was concerned, we had no liabilities to give them any food, and in any case, they didn't like English food.
And were all the soldiers married, or at least having a family?
No. When they came from their country to enlist to be a soldier, of course, they came alone. And then when they were enlisted and trained and went to the lines, they could have a woman if they wanted, but only one. We did know that some of the troops had more than one woman, but we turned a blind eye to this. But it was clearly laid down that there was to be only one woman in the lines. And I remember one of my sergeants, a chap that I became very friendly with. He was an extremely nice, reliable man. He had seven wives. One he kept in the lines with him, and the other six down in the town. And he seemed somehow to take care of the seven of them without any trouble. I never heard of any family upsets, and he was always a very happy man and contented with life.
What happened to the children on the camp? Did they receive any education? Did they come into the army?
Well, they didn't receive any education from the army, but some of them, when they were old enough, say 5 or 6 years of age, would go to mission schools, and these were highly successful, you know, Catholic, Baptist, Presbyterian, Church of England mission schools, where they were given a fairly sound education.
Was there any religious observance amongst Africans in the regiment itself?
No, these chaps had no religion, although some of the troops were attracted towards religion during their tour of service, and they would go to one of the missions, or say to the local Catholic church, and they would ask to be converted to the faith, and they would become very good Christians. And this is a thing we encouraged with them.
This happened quite a lot, did it?
Yes, quite a few went off to missions or to the local Catholic church and became Christians. And they really did like religion. They were told all about God. They were told about the Bible. They were told the story of the Bible, which they seemed to absorb and believe in. And well, they just became good Christians.
What was their pattern of leave?
Leave? Well, this would vary according to where the man lived. If a man had come, say, 500 or 600 miles to join the regiment, then if he wanted to return to his village, he would be given 2 months' leave with subsistence. Their only responsibility was to get themselves back to where they came from, and they normally did this by either walking it or hitching a lift on cocoa lorries. There were plenty of those, and generally speaking, getting there the best way they could.
Did they keep their uniform on when they travelled?
No, they had to travel in civilian cloth. I say civilian cloth because normally their civilian clothes consisted of a cloth. And if they were going back to their country, they would just put on their cloth, they would take a bedroll, and they would set off. And it was emphasized to them before they left that they were soldiers and subject to the rules of army discipline regarding leave, and they were told that if they didn't return, and if they deserted from the regiment, and if they were caught, they would be court-martialed.
Did this ever happen?
No, I don't myself recollect one case of where the soldier never came back. And this is easily understandable because they were well paid, they were well clothed, they had good subsistence allowance, and they loved being a soldier, and they just wanted to see their people, spend a time with them, and then they would always return.
What was their career pattern?
What, you mean the length of time spent with the regiment? Well, they were enlisted for a certain number of years' service. I think about 7 years to begin with. And then, at the end of that time, they could take on, the same as the British soldier did, and they could serve their time for pension. And at the end of that time, they were awarded a small pension, and they could go back to their country if they wanted to, or if they didn't, they could go to the old soldier settlement on the outskirts of Kumasi, which quite a lot of them did.
This was maintained by the army?
Yes. It was started... It was started several years before I went to the Gold Coast in 1931, and it was administered by the staff quartermaster of the Gold Coast Regiment at regimental headquarters, who had an old sergeant major, pensioned sergeant major, in charge of the settlement, and he would have a good liaison with the staff quartermaster and would come in about once a week to sort out any little problems he had, or to see about articles of kit required by the men. And by and large, you could very well describe the old soldiers' settlement as a rest home, because they weren't obliged to do any work. They were advised to have a piece of land and to till it, which they did, as if they were fit enough. But if they were suffering from any form of disability, they could just rest at the old soldiers' settlement, which really was a rest home.
How many soldiers did this take at any one time?
I think we had vacancies for about 40. And we had soldiers in the settlement of over 80 years of age, who could tell you all about the siege of Kumasi in 1900, which they took part in. And every once a year on Kumasi Day, I forget the date of Kumasi Day, the old soldiers would be brought in from the settlement, and they would be dressed under the direction of the staff quartermaster and his staff. They would be issued with rifles and blank ammunition, and they would go to the fort, and they would reenact the siege of Kumasi as it occurred when the king of the Ashantis was attacking the fort. And that was when all the white people had been taken to the fort and accommodated there to save them from being killed. And the troops manned the ramparts of the fort, and just by their superior discipline and firepower, they managed to repel the Ashanti tribesmen.
Was there a very strong sense of regimental tradition and loyalty amongst the troops?
Yes, yes. The regimental traditions were really drummed into the African soldier so that he absorbed it. And especially the story of the siege of Kumasi. And this did do something for the African soldier. It built up this tradition in him, and he felt that he was really a member of a very crack regiment indeed.
Were there any changes in the mechanisation or the rearmament of the regiment in the late 30s because of the war in Abyssinia? any preparations made for war?
No. Up to the time I left, although there was an Abyssinian crisis, it seemed to have little effect on the regiment at all. And we had told the troops on many occasions that war was a possibility. We always emphasized with them that we were training them for war. We didn't say that a war was going to happen, but we told them that we were training them for war. And, we told them all we could about what it was to go to war and to fight a war.
Am I right in thinking that you spent longer than usual in Africa, that you did more than the usual number of tours of duty?
Yes. The normal arrangement was three tours of duty of 18 months on the coast, but I was asked by the colonel of the regiment if I would do a fourth tour, and as I'd been keeping fairly well, I decided that I would come back for a fourth tour, and instead of 18 months, on that occasion I did 20 months.
And you moved then to Kumasi in Ashanti as a warrant officer. This was a promotion.
Yes, well, I went to the Gulf Regiment as a sergeant with the Light Battery. Then, after a short probationary period, I became a battery quartermaster sergeant. And then they were looking for a warrant officer for headquarters, someone they knew what they wanted, and they decided that they would like me up there, and I was asked if I would like to be transferred to regimental headquarters as a regimental quartermaster sergeant, which is warrant officer class 2, and I decided to accept it. And I found the work extremely interesting.
What did you do?
It was the receipt and accounting for stores from the Crown agents. That covered all the kitting and equipment of all the African troops, and the accounting for everything in ledgers, and the supervising the issue of this clothing and equipment to the African soldiers. And of course, duties connected with the old soldiers' settlement. So by and large, I had a busy but interesting life.
Did you have African clerks to help you?
Yes, in the staff quartermaster's section, we had a pay clerk who looked after the troops' pay. Then we had a civilian clerk who assisted the two RQMSs in their stores duties, and then we had three storemen in the stores with the express purpose of looking after the kit, seeing that any kit unpacked wasn't attacked by moths or by the white ant, and everything was run on a very efficient store system. Every article was on a tally card, and we found it necessary to keep a constant check on the clothing, especially because the African can be a bit light-fingered, and if they were short of a pair of socks, they would, if they could get away with it, take a pair from the stores.
Did you find the clerks in general reliable and efficient?
Yes. my own clerk, I gave you a letter which he wrote to me, and my head storeman, who was of the rank of sergeant, he was a most reliable man, a very good disciplinarian, and someone I felt I could trust.
Would you say that in general army discipline was maintained by keeping a distance between yourself and the Africans, or by the virtue of you coming together in this sort of work?
Well, I think army discipline was maintained by example. I think all the officers and NCOs who went to the Gold Coast had good discipline, and this seemed to rub itself off onto the African troops. So far as they were concerned, I think I've said before, they liked discipline, and I think they liked you being a disciplinarian all the time. To the African, funnily enough, kindness is a weakness. They don't understand it. And they prefer the strict discipline which we had in the Gold Coast Regiment.
Did you keep that sort of attitude when you were dealing with your servants?
Yes, yes. One had to be extremely careful with the servants, because they were coast Africans, and they were terrible thieves, and it was necessary to be extremely strict with them all the time. If you slacked up at all, they just took advantage of it and didn't do their work properly.
And you left Africa in 1939.
Yes.
And were involved in the Second World War very heavily.
Yes.
But are your impressions of Africa and your memories positive on the whole? Did you enjoy your time?
Yes, so much so that I've got quite a clear memory of my service in Africa. And at my age, thinking back on the years I spent there, I often think how pleasant it was, and I think about the people I met and knew there, both British and African.